I call the House Education Finance Committee to order, and we do have a quorum, so we'll go right to the minutes. I should say we also have a quorum because Representative Pryor is present and joining us via Zoom with permission from the Speaker of the House in accordance to the House rules. So we have a member on Zoom, so please speak into your mic so everybody can participate. And with that, Representative Spencer Murrow, have you had a chance to look at the minutes?
Yes, I have, Madam Chair.
Would you like to move the minutes of March 22nd?
Yes, I move the minutes of March.
Representative Spencer moves the minutes of March 22nd. Does anybody have any questions on the minutes? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, no. The minutes are adopted. With that, we'll move to our first bill on the agenda, House File 2685. Representative Hornstein, welcome to the Education Finance Committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Vice Chair Clardy, would you like to move House File 2685 before the committee?
So moved.
With the intention of laying over for the Education Finance Bill, and then I know there's an A1 amendment. Vice Chair Clardy, will you move the A1 amendment?
Also moved.
Thank you. So, Representative Hornstein, we have the A1 amendment in front of us. Will you briefly speak to the amendment?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members, for hearing House File 2685. And, yes, this is an amendment just simply to get the bill in the shape I'd like the committee to consider it. We just move an effective date for completion of work from a task force that's formed in the committee. We also add a representative from the Tribal Nations Education Committee, and we delete compensation for certain members of the task force. So that is the amendment.
Thank you, Representative Hornstein. With that, members, are there any questions on the A1 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. The A1 amendment's adopted. The bill's in the shape the author prefers. Why don't you go ahead and insert your bill, Representative Hornstein?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members. So I'm very proud to offer you House File 2685 as amended. And the reason I'm carrying this is very personal. This bill addresses the issue of Holocaust and genocide education. I come to the issue because my parents were survivors of the Holocaust. I felt from a very early age, just growing up in our household, how important it was to honor this history. I never knew my grandparents, and from that experience, I became very sensitive also to the fact that there were other genocides besides the one that my family was victimized by. So in college, I became very interested in the stories of my parents, the stories of my relatives that survived. So I did an oral history. I went around with a tape recorder. I captured my parents' stories and then again several uncles and other cousins. And so I created this thesis for McAllister College, my undergraduate thesis. And so at the Education Policy Committee, Madam Chair, members, we had a testimony from a Holocaust survivor, and she was 99 years old, and I would really encourage members to look at the tape of her testimony, and of course there were a number of news stories, so you can see those as well. But we don't have a survivor here, but I did want to very briefly bring my parents' voices from this work to the committee, and again, the stories are so harrowing, and it's really a mirror. I still don't know to this day how they survived this. And my mom was from Poland, a town called Lviv, which is now Lviv in Ukraine. And my dad was from a small town not far from Ukraine called Hojdanánás in Hungary. So first I'm just going to read very briefly from my mother's experience. She was in a forced labor camp and had to walk to the camp from where she was living in what was called the ghetto in Lviv. And she writes, I'll never forget one evening when we came back from work. It was already dark. It was winter. There was a lot of snow on the ground in Poland, very cold. And as we marched into the gate of the ghetto, we saw on both sides people shot. There must have been at least 100 on each side of the walk, the main road that led to the camp. They just took people out of columns and shot them. Sometimes people were just hanging there. It was a horrible, horrible time. I just don't understand how I ever lived through that. My father had escaped from a forced labor camp in Hungary. Both my mother and father at different times in their experience were housed by non-Jews, very courageous non-Jews. We call them the righteous, who sheltered them at great risk to themselves. And so after my dad escaped from a forced labor camp, he was sheltered in a rural area in a farmhouse until the end of the war by a non-Jewish farmer. And then as he was making his way back to his hometown, he was arrested by the Russians, his liberators, who mistook him as a Nazi. So what he's describing here is he found a Russian soldier who he felt looked Jewish and started speaking Yiddish to him. And so then the Russian soldier let him go. So here's his story, and then very briefly about that experience, and then about him returning to his hometown. It's a little bit, I get a little emotional when I read about this. But he said, I felt awful that I survived the Germans, and I'm not surviving my quote-unquote liberators. So to my luck, I was in when I was in the work camp, the prisoner of war camp, the Russian prisoner of war camp, a Russian Jewish soldier came, and again, I recognized him from his appearance. I talked to him in Yiddish, and he took me out from the camp. This was my last encounter with the Russian army. From there on, I finally got back to Hoydananash, that's his hometown. I stayed there for a few weeks, waiting for the family to come back. Little by little, few people came back. I found out the terrible news about my parents and members of my family. So, we don't want anyone to find out terrible news about their families because of genocide. And so I'll just conclude before the testifiers that it was very, very important, again, to not only honor the memory of my parents and the grandparents that I never met through this legislation, but also including all other genocides. I think particularly here in Minnesota, the genocide of indigenous peoples must be taught in the schools. And then we list many others in the bill. Armenian genocide, Cambodian genocide, Rwandan genocide, and others. And so ex-Yugoslav. And we have people from these communities that live among us here in Minnesota. Their descendants are survivors. There's a Ukrainian genocide in the 30s. People were starved to death under Stalin in Ukraine. So even just going through the bill, I think, is an educational experience because so many of these we may not even know about. So we talk about Holocaust and genocide education in this bill. And so, members, thank you very much for hearing this bill. Thank you for hearing my family's stories. And I have a couple of testifiers, Madam Chair.
Thank you. With that, we have two testifiers. We have we have Dr. Gabrielle Spears Rico and Laura Zelli. Whoever would like to go first, just state your name for the record and proceed.
Good morning. My name is Dr. Gabrielle Spears Rico. I was awarded a PhD in comparative ethnic studies with an emphasis in anthropology and Native American studies from the University of California at Berkeley in 2015. As a cultural anthropologist, I have published on the representation and politics of contemporary indigenous communities in Mexico, whom I have been researching and collaborating with during the last 15 years. Currently, I serve as a jointly appointed assistant professor, a McKnight Land Grant professor at the University of Minnesota in the departments of Chicano Latino Studies and American Indian Studies. And I'm also a board member of the Center for Holocaust and Genocide Studies. Today, I testify to support this bill as an indigenous person, a member of the Pirinda community from the state of Michoacán in central Mexico, as the mother of a Native American child who was both a Dakota descendant and an Ojibwe tribal member, and as an academic with expertise on the topic. It is exciting to see that this mandate includes language on indigenous genocide. Parenting a child going through St. Paul Public Schools, I have noticed how indigenous people from this continent are left out of history curriculum in our public schools. The genocide that occurred to our people is hardly or only referentially mentioned. It is important for our Indigenous children to see themselves in the curriculum and for all children to learn about how colonialism impacted the Indigenous people of the Americas. Such education helps counter stereotypes like Indian mascots, which are rooted in violent colonial histories that negatively impact Indigenous representation. In Minnesota, it is particularly important for curriculum to include the Dakota genocide, as well as Ojibwe and Ho-Chunk and Menominee dispossession that took place, all of which involved mass deportations of American Indian people within and outside of the state. Events such as the imprisonment of Dakota people at Fort Snelling and the expulsion to Camp Davenport, Iowa, should be acknowledged and taught, so that going forward, we can move towards reconciliation and towards building a future that is inclusive of the interests and wellness of Indigenous people while working with our tribal nations. Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee.
Thank you so much, Dr. Spears-Rico. Next up, we have Laura Zelli.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Laura Zell. I'm a child of a Holocaust survivor, a former St. Paul Public School teacher, and the current director of Holocaust education at the Jewish Community Relations Council of Minnesota and the Dakotas. Centering the complexity of this history is essential as it creates opportunities for students to develop critical thinking skills, accurately interpret history, and develop a greater sense of civic social responsibility. These are not easy topics to teach, these are not easy topics to understand, and they often bring up more questions than answers. In my daily role, I meet and train teachers from across Minnesota. They have told me time and time again that through quality professional development opportunities and curated resources, they would feel more confident teaching these subjects, answering student questions, and they know they can do it well with support from us. This bill doesn't ask them to do more or figure it out by themselves. This bill equips teachers to successfully teach to the new social studies standards by establishing a diverse task force, which would be led by two co-chairs and all overseen by the Commissioner of Education. Teachers from middle school and high school would be on this committee, English language arts, social studies, and a student representation, as well as members from other committees with genocide history. The group's two main tasks would be to build the repository of resources and identify professional development opportunities for teachers to self-select the opportunities and then be supported with funds. The working group would plan the outline and finalize the timeline to fulfill its duties and then make the recommendations to the Department of Education. So just want to emphasize how gathering the most current, updated, curated resources and securing funding for the teacher training is incredibly necessary to empower teachers to teach this in an incredibly powerful way so that it benefits all of our students.
Thank you so much, Laura Zell. Sorry, I mispronounced your name. Next up, we have a public testifier that has signed up, Mariam Mikhailyela. And please state your name for the record properly, because I'm sure I did not say that appropriately. You just make some room, that's perfect, thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair Joachim and members of the committee, and Barev to you all. I am Mariam Mikhailyan, and I'm a Capital Pathways intern and a sophomore student at St. Olaf College. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today on House File 2685, and thank you, Representative Hornston, for bringing this important proposal forward. I'm Armenian, and in case you don't know, the Armenian Genocide, which occurred between 1915 and 1923, is considered one of the biggest genocides of the 20th century. And unfortunately, it was not the last one, and it was followed by many more genocides like the Cambodian, the Rwandan, the Bosnian genocides, and perhaps the most well-known in the West, Holocaust, as well as many other genocides that are yet to be talked about. As an advocate for education and a future educator, I believe that schools are the place where intellectual discourse is born, where critical conversations and debates, just like the ones about genocide, are fostered. Thought, understanding, and awareness are vital in preventing issues and working effectively towards creating justice. Awareness can also inspire future generations to take meaningful action by advocating for change, just like it inspired so many American missionaries to commit to lobbying their governments to intervene and provide aid to the victims of the Armenian genocide back in the early 1900s. I have found myself giving a presentation in my classrooms about my cause every single time I had the opportunity to. A classroom should not be the only place where students have a platform to speak on their causes, but it is certainly the place where these conversations are born and carried forward. Thus, I urge the committee's support for this bill in order for there to be further awareness of identities similar to mine that have been affected by genocide. I appreciate the committee's consideration and time. Thank you again, Representative Horston, for your leadership on the proposal. Thank you.
Thank you so much. With that, members, no other folks have signed up to testify. So are there any questions or comments at the table? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Hornstein. I want to commend you. I think this is important. I also think it's, you know, unfortunately, throughout human history, we've had genocides and forever in every culture, virtually, in every continent, in every country. And I think it's important that as we're teaching about these things that we're talking about some of the others, like the Armenian, like things that are happening now in China, because there's still ongoing genocide in the world. And so I think it's, I'm thankful that you're including, you know, every culture out there, including future potential genocide. So thank you.
Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Representative Edelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Hornstein. This is such a great bill. I know we've talked about it, and I really do. I echo what was just said in terms of making sure it's really inclusive. The one thing I was looking at is in terms of the really we have a large Somali population in the state of Minnesota, and there was a lot of conflict where a lot of refugees came here because of a lot of there was a lot of killing, and I don't know if it's termed as a genocide, but do we know if that's going to be included in some of these teachings?
Representative Hornstein.
Madam Chair, I'll defer to our experts here. We do have a definition of genocide, and of course there's been a lot of tragedy, in Darfur and Southwest Africa, but I would ask the our experts to address that question.
Doctor?
Yes, this is that region is out of my area of expertise. However, there is a specific definition within the UN of what constitutes genocide, targeted and systematic killing, removal, disappearance, targeting cultures, languages, etc. I'm guessing that that could be considered if we could get an expert that would actually know the region better and the conditions under which refugees from Somalia were displaced. But I can't personally speak to it.
Thank you. Madam Chair. Edelson, follow up?
Oh, sorry, Madam Chair. I think Mr. Roberts has maybe something to it. I would just say it was a lot of conflict between clans, and there was significant death. I don't know the number, but I just would say I think that we have, I think it would, if I don't know if that would be covered in the ethnic studies bill, yes. Representative Senator Murray, like just, yeah.
Looks like they phoned a friend. So yeah. State your name for the record, please, and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ethan Roberts, I'm the Deputy Executive Director of the Jewish Community Relations Council. Representative Edelson, the bill does have a definition for instance of mass violence, and that's on line 2.7. And there is also a requirement in the requirements section of the bill, beginning at line 2.21. And it analyzes how individuals, groups, and societies around the world have been affected by genocide, with many genocides, but then it also, if you move to line 2.28, cases of genocide and mass violence, especially those experienced by communities expelled from, resettled in, migrated to, or living in Minnesota. I am not an expert on genocide, unlike the professor, but for me, that would definitely sound like the Somali community has been, if not genocide, then at least victims of mass violence. And they have certainly are a huge part of the fabric of our state, have resettled here. And so I think that that language absolutely provides a pathway for if a classroom teacher wanted to focus on the experience of the Somali community.
Madam Chair, just one follow-up. I guess I would just encourage maybe adding them into the language. I think the Somali community is such a rich, important part of our population here in Minnesota, and I think there's a disconnect on why we have so many refugees that initially have come here. So if there's a way to insert them, I think, in this bill, I think that would be really appreciated.
Thank you. Further, Representative Harris-Vega.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Hornstein. As someone that identifies as a Boricua member of the Taino Nation, the importance of this education is so needed. It is our connection to all of our tribes and all global tribes that have experienced being told that we're extinct when we're right here living in our daily lives. If it wasn't for the education that was provided to me by our cultural leaders and by our elders, I don't know where I would be in this world to feel connected to studying. I learned that from my mother that she was told that the Tainos didn't exist until she was able to go into the mountains of where my grandmother was raised as a little girl to find out that a lot of our education here comes from my people, the indigenous people where I come from's language. The word barbecue is a Taino word. The word canoa, canoe, huracan, that's in our daily vocabularies. If it wasn't for these studies that are taught to the folks that are holding on to the relics of our blood and our ancestry, I really don't know where the connection would be with us even being here today to survive. This is so essential and so necessary. It is our connection to everyone else's stories of survival as well. It's what makes you and I brother and sister. So I appreciate this, and I appreciate the work of the testifiers here as well and what you're doing in higher ed. Muchas gracias.
Thank you. Members, any other comments or questions? Representative Fuchsia.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Hornstein, for the bill. I apologize for my voice. So this is heavy stuff. And I've been fortunate enough in the last 10 to 15 years to go through some of these stories, and whether it's in Israel or the Jewish folks or the Yad Vashem, and I can say that that has made me definitely a better person, but I could not have had those stories younger in my life in the comprehension. I wasn't there yet. And we're looking at something that's about to possibly become a law in Minnesota statutes. And my worries on this are the conversations that I had to get to my understanding didn't come because of a mandate. They came because when I was ready to have those conversations and I was ready to understand, I could. I look at this and I think even when I walk through the stories of the Yad Vashem, and I'm hoping I'm pronouncing that correctly, I'm going back to my recollection, it wasn't a time-stamped set of years, it was how a population was treated over time and how we got there. And my worry on this, when I look at this, is the context, and we're going to have another bill on ethnic studies, and I think these are all conversations that are important. So my direct question to you, Representative Hornstein, is I look at lines 2.1 through 2.6. We're asking people to teach things that we prescribe in law that have different levels of understanding. And let's look at line 2.1, imposing measures intended to prevent births within the group. We have different levels of understanding of even abortion and how that's going to be taught in schools. What are we going to allow for different points of view? And how do we get there? I worry about that, and I worry about that not in the context of politically, but I worry about in the context of having that conversation correctly when this is such a heavy topic. I'll ask you directly, could a pro-life person teach this in preventive births in a religious school differently than somebody who is not pro-life? And would that be acceptable?
Representative Hornstein.
Madam Chair, Representative Pisha, we have Zelly is an mm-hmm. expert educator in genocide education. Mm-hmm. And I don't think the views of a teacher teaching genocide, we are creating a task force that is going to really go through the curriculum, really, you know, dig down into sort of what are the best practices, what's worked at particular age levels. And through this task force, we have a group of experts that is going to be providing direction and resources for educators. And so, you know, I think Holocaust education and genocide education, it doesn't matter the background or viewpoint of a particular teacher. We're just equipping teachers with the tools they need to teach this effectively. To your first point, Madam Chair and Representative Precia, I appreciated it, because this morning I was looking at the introduction of what Frank Hornsing from 43 years ago was writing for this honors thesis. And I was very concerned with the fact that the Holocaust literature at the time only focused on the war years of 1933 to 1945 and didn't talk about people's lives and culture before that and didn't talk about the survivors' lives after that. So I made a real point here to interview people about their lives before the Holocaust and after the Holocaust. But maybe Ms. Zell can answer your question specifically to the qualifications of teachers.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead and state your name for the record again and proceed.
Thank you. I'm Laura Zell. Thank you for the question. Actually, the as we train teachers, there's sort of a mantra we have, and it's we say safely in and safely out. So developmentally, you bring kids in where they're ready to absorb the lessons, right? And through these curated resources that we're talking about, we're not talking about providing links upon links upon links. We're talking about really curating this so that they can follow a path that makes sense emotionally, developmentally for the students that they're gonna teach. So that's one thing. So it's actually a perfect question for why we wanna take the time and form this working group. And Representative Hornstein, I think that you answered that beautifully. As far as what did you? I'm sorry. Repeat what you just said. The last.
We want to on Holocaust education. We want to include the entire time frame. I think that's what I said last.
Okay.
You know,
so,
for people's experience.
Right. So I think that you know the details in the material that we train on addresses this intensely, right? So you don't start at the gates of Auschwitz with anybody. It's not a shock. It's not to grab attention. You actually start with citizen rights, because at the beginning of the war, what was stripped from the Jews in, under Nazi Germany was their rights to have citizenship in that state. So you actually start with who was this population? What was the rights of citizens? What was taken away? What were the attitudes of neighbor to neighbor? Who was complicit? Who was active? Who was a perpetrator? Who was a bystander? So these universal lessons take place throughout with this particular history. I would imagine once we get into listening and looking over curriculum and resources of how other genocides are taught, that framework would apply. But I think it's an excellent question, because we want to take the time to make sure that we address that.
Members, just as a reminder, I know not everybody sat on education policy, but the policy portions of this bill were vetted through policy. We're really focused on page 3 in the fiscal area. So, Representative Precia, one more follow-up, and then we're moving on.
Thank you. And I respect that, and I respect the time, and I probably won't have as many comments on the next bill as well. So to that point, we are a finance committee. We are a committee that's about to put or consider this going into statute and the financial implications of that. And I guess what you just said was fantastic and beautiful, and I'd love to sit down and talk more deeply about that. But financially, we have a problem where over half the kids still can't read and still have deficiencies in math. And as I watch my kids coming through high school now, who are pulling all-nighters just to finish their last test to graduate, and I look at this and say, is this too much? Is this too much, too early for them? When, like I said, financially, we're still just trying to deal with reading and math scores and academic success. And then to get them through these conversations, which are incredibly valuable, I just don't know that we have all the resources to get there, and I think this just adds more to that. So that that's a much broader conversation, a much longer one, and I'll leave it at that.
Thank you. With that, members, Representative Hornstein, final comments.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members, for the really good discussion. I appreciated the comments and the stories that you all told as well. And I just really appreciate your support. This is important to so many communities, but important to really everybody. And there are 23 states that have some form of this. And I think it makes our students much better active citizens so that they can know what happens so that it never happens again.
Thank you, Representative Hornstein. With that, House File 2685 is as amended, is laid over for possible inclusion in the Education Finance Bill. Next up, we have House File 1502, Representative Sensenbrenner.
Thank you.
Go ahead and bring some of your testifiers up as well with you.
Thank you.
Representative Sensenbrenner, welcome to your committee.
Thank you.
Would you like to move House File 1502 before the committee with the intention to lay over the bill for possible inclusion in education finance?
Yes, and I also have an amendment, the A4 amendment. Do you want me to speak
yes,
to...
Yes, why don't you move the A4 amendment before the committee as well and then speak to the amendment.
Great. I would like to move the A4 amendment. This amendment is based on many conversations that we have had with stakeholders, such as staff at MDE, school administrators, and educators. The biggest change that we are making from the version of the bill that was heard in the Education Policy Committee is changing a piece that was in the original bill that was making ethnic studies a graduation requirement. We heard the concerns of districts around the state about that, and have changed the language to now state that all high schools must offer an optional ethnic studies course, which ensures that students across our state have access to this important curriculum while also continuing to give flexibility to districts. We have also pushed back the implementation date to the 2026-27 school year to coincide with the proposed new social studies standards that will most likely include ethnic studies and a few other just clarifying language.
Thank you, Representative Sensenbrenner. Are there any questions on the A4 amendment to get the bill in the shape the author would like? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. The A4 amendment is adopted. And with that, members, just to let you know, we do have a full schedule, so we will try to get this bill done by 11:30, if not a little bit afterwards. So, up to 11:45.
Thank you.
With that, Representative Sensenbrenner, go ahead and proceed.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I come before you today to present House File 1502, a bill for ethnic studies for all Minnesota students. This is not the first time that this bill has been introduced, and I want to credit our representatives, Chair Fu Lee and Representative Cedric Frazier before me, who have worked with advocates and most importantly students, including the Ethnic Studies Coalition, on pushing this important piece of legislation forward. The Ethnic Studies for All legislation offers the opportunity to bridge the ethnic and cultural divide in Minnesota classrooms by incorporating ethnic studies instruction for all students. The Ethnic Studies for All bill would do three things. It would ensure all students in Minnesota have access to ethnic studies curriculum through ensuring that all high school students in Minnesota have the option to take an ethnic studies course. It would create an ethnic studies working group composed of a diverse array of educators, students, and community experts to advise MDE on ethnic studies content and curricular resources. And third, it would provide support to aid school districts in the development and implementation of ethnic studies curriculum tailored to the diverse community needs and interests of our local district. I want to start with a personal experience that explains why I am so invested in this bill and this work. And don't worry, I don't also have a thesis with me as Chair Hornstein. But my story starts in ninth grade, where I was in a world studies class in Minneapolis Public Schools. It was the end of the year, and I was frustrated that we had spent our time in that class only focused on Europe. I stayed after class to ask the teacher when we would learn about other countries, continents, or cultures. The teacher told me that I could learn about that when I got to college. That experience has stayed with me. I did get a chance to go on to college and take ethnic studies courses, but I know that many of my students of color, did not have that opportunity. And I believe that one of the reasons we lose students of color within our school system is due to the disengagement that comes when you don't see yourself reflected and when you don't see your history, your culture, and your people valued or taught in the classroom. There is a metaphor that is popular in education that says the best education should offer students mirrors and windows. Mirrors for students to be able to see themselves, their histories, their culture, and windows to look out at other histories, other cultures, and other identities. Ethnic studies curriculum is based on this concept, and students across the state are asking for this course. A few weeks ago, we had over 100 students here in the Rotunda rallying for ethnic studies from St. Paul, Minneapolis, Worthington, and Shakopee. Over 30 districts already offer ethnic studies courses, and many districts are already implementing courses that could meet the ethnic studies requirement. From Native American Studies in the LaPorte School District that Representative Knutson represents, to Hmong and Somali Studies in Minneapolis, the school district that I represent. Students of all racial and ethnic identities benefit from ethnic studies. Today's students are growing up in a more globalized and interconnected world. Ethnic studies invite students to more deeply explore the many diverse cultures and histories within our state and country, and in doing so, gain a better understanding of themselves and their classmates. Ethnic studies equip students with the knowledge and perspective to live and lead in a more diverse, globalized, and interconnected world. And I just wanted to share one note about the approach of this bill. While ethnic studies will most likely be embedded in the new social studies standards, we are still pushing to ensure access to this content by mandating that all high schools offer an optional ethnic studies course to students. We are in continued conversations with MDE and school districts about how to make this feasible for districts of different sizes and capacities, including looking into virtual course options. And finally, I want to thank my colleagues across the aisle for the conversations I have been able to have with them about this bill. Thank you for sharing your concerns with me. From those conversations, I believe that we share a deep commitment to doing right by our district and, most importantly, our students. I know that for some, there is fear that ethnic studies curriculum may lead to further division between our students. And I just want to say that I'm bringing this bill because I believe that division exists when we do not have the space to learn from each other, to confront and reckon with our histories, and to imagine new ways of being together. And ethnic studies courses do just that. And I would now like to yield the rest of my time to my testifiers. Thank you.
Thank you so much. I've got Jackie Lee, Zhu Zhang, Miracruz Lozano-Rios, and Isabella Cook. If you could each keep your comments to the 2 minutes, that would be wonderful. Thank you. Go ahead and state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Jacqueline Lay, and I'm a student at Great River School. I'm here today to speak in favor of the Ethnic Studies for All Bill, House File 1502. As a second-generation Vietnamese-American with immigrant parents, I have always felt like an outcast because of the differences that my identity prescribed me. This feeling followed me from a very young age into my education, as I found witness time and time again that the history of the Black, Indigenous, Latinx, Asian, and other marginalized communities like mine were being put on the sidelines in favor of a more dominant lens molded by more than a century's worth of colonization. The perspectives of our communities were seen as not valuable enough by our school curriculum, not valuable enough to even be allowed more than just 1 month out of the year for the commemoration of our already barely discussed histories. I found that my voice to speak out about my family's history and my being regulated to nothing more than a stereotype became silenced in the classroom. Then the pandemic hit and everything changed. I saw that the lack of education about Asian American history outside of the dominant lens bred fear and ignorance into people, leading to a culmination of unwarranted attacks and violence against the Asian American community, my family, and myself. 2021 was one of the scariest years of my life because of the surge in anti-Asian hate crimes against our community. And there was a point where I had begged my mother not to go to the local grocery store in fear of her getting called slurs, spat on, or worse. The fear and ignorance that caused people to attack my community could have been avoided if the curriculum we taught our youth included diverse cultural perspectives that accounted for all sides of our society's complex history, which ethnic studies effectively does. Taking ethnic studies encouraged me and my peers to share our experiences in the classroom and validated them when they have never been for so long. It allowed us for once to see in all our years of schooling to learn U.S. history in a way that reflects the diverse melting pot of cultures and people that American society really is. My peers, my little sister, and our youth deserve to see themselves and their diverse histories represented in the curriculum that will set them up to become well-informed citizens of the future. I urge you all to vote yes on this bill because, as our history has taught us before, if we do not learn and reflect on the mistakes of our past, we will only serve to repeat them in the future. Thank you for your time.
Thank you so much. Next up, go ahead and state your name for the record and proceed.
Good morning, Chair Yeo Kim and House Education Finance Committee members. My name is Su Zhang. I'm a former teacher of English as a second language and the current ethnic studies specialist in St. Paul Public Schools. I'm here to testify in support of Representative Sansomira's bill, House File 1502. I am a product of ethnic studies. I was born and raised by refugee parents in Wisconsin and attended the University of Minnesota Twin Cities for my undergrad. The first time I had a teacher that looked like me and curriculum that looked like me was freshman year, fall semester, intro to Asian American Studies with Dr. Erica Lee. It was incredibly profound how deeply that experience reached down into me and validated the little girl I was and the adult woman I was growing to be. I went on to complete my minor in Asian American Studies. SPPS is one of two districts in Minnesota with an ethnic studies graduation requirement. Ethnic studies in SPPS was born from the hard work and dedication of youth in our district, expressing the need for a course that reflects and validates their identities and lived experiences. Our stories and experiences, our histories, are not electives and shouldn't be treated as such. Over the past few decades, Minnesota's K-12 student population has become increasingly diverse. Students of color make up approximately 35% of the state population and 80% of the population in the Twin Cities area. House File 1502 would help provide accessible ethnic studies curriculum and instruction in all Minnesota to all Minnesota students, guidance to school districts and leaders, and strengthen already existing ethnic studies courses and programs in Minnesota. Our young people are still here today asking for an education that challenges them to think critically about the world and empower them to be change agents of positive change. I'm excited for the stories and the journeys that lie in front of us, and I ask you to join us in that journey. I urge you to support House File 1502. Thank you.
Thank you. And then if we can, next up we have Maria Cruz Lozano Rios and Isabella Cook. If you could both come up, that'd be great. And if you just state your name for the record and proceed.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Maria Cruz Lozano Rios, and I am a current college student at Minneapolis College and a leader with Unidos Minnesota. I am here today to express my support for the Ethnic Studies for All Bill, House File 1502. I want to begin by sharing my high school experience, which is where I began to notice that I didn't feel identified in any of my history or social studies courses. As a Mexican documented woman, I had no representation. I joined a group of Latino students to demand for a culturally responsive course, which eventually led to us receiving Chicano studies. But the school did not invest in us or the course, and it failed. All because we had no one investing or representing us. I graduated high school feeling failed by the education system, and as if school did not care for their Latino students. But just as we demanded representation in education back then, we are back here today demanding it even more. I decided to pursue higher education to help fix the system that failed me. I am currently at Minneapolis College, and this is my first time taking an ethnic studies course. The course is designed to teach you about the history of different ethnic and cultural communities and how ethnic studies is taught in the context of K-12 education in the United States. This course has taught me so much, and I finally feel represented, heard, and like I have a fully rounded education. My experience in ethnic studies course has allowed me to understand my identity, my family, and the shared experience of immigrating to the United States. This course has been so crucial to my understanding of the world around me, and I only wish this would have been offered to me in high school. If I would have had this in high school, I feel like I would have not struggled with understanding my own identity and identities of others. I would not have felt like giving up on high school. And as if The system disregarded me for who I was. I am pursuing my education because I want to become an ethnic studies teacher to ensure that children are represented, heard, educated, and ultimately not failed by the system. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Next up, please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Chair and Committee. My name is Isabella Cook, and I'm the Youth Program Organizer with Unidos Minnesota. I am here to advocate for HF 1502. I am and have always been a firm believer in the power of education. Fascinated by the ability of our teachers to sculpt and inspire minds, I saw my teachers as gifts, as walking mentors of humanity itself. However, as I grew older, I started to notice some things. One, if our education is meant to shape us and teach us about ourselves, then why is over half of our student body being excluded from class discussion, curriculum, and materials? Two, if our education is meant to shape us and prepare us for life outside the classroom, then why aren't we teaching our students the full narrative of what it means to be marginalized, to exist outside the norms of power and control, or how our histories have impacted our nation's people today? Three, if our education is meant to teach us what it means to be American, then where is my culture? Where is my story? Does the Caribbean and Caribbean American make me an outcast in the place that I've always called home? There are gaping holes in our current education system. I hear about these gaps every day with the students I work with. As a youth worker and future educator, I strive to protect all students and to teach them that each and every one of them matters, because that's what I would have wanted in their shoes. I didn't get to have an ethnic studies at my school. There was no opportunity for me to learn about myself or my Afro-Caribbean neighbors. As a result, I didn't begin to fathom my identity as a Caribbean American until deep into college, and I'm still trying to figure out where I stand. I was fortunate enough to pave my own path, but privilege or the right circumstance is not enough for these kids. Our youth are dying at our own hands, and I refuse to stand by and watch as another student falls through these cracks. Ethnic studies provides us with the opportunity to bridge the cultural gaps that have been haunting this state and nation for decades. Ethnic studies fosters genuine community building while also offering all students a real pathway to success in education, one without barriers of prejudice, hate, lack of resources, or lack of validation. Ethnic studies is the key to a life much greater, and for some kids, the guarantee of a brighter future ahead. I urge you all to vote yes to ethnic studies for all, if not for yourself, for the betterment of our MN children. Thank you.
Thank you. The next two folks we have up are Robert Osborne. We're going to public testimony. I should have announced. We have Robert Osborne and Alfreda Baldwin. Alfreda, if you want to join too, that'd be great. Go ahead and state your name for the record and proceed.
All right. Thank you very much. I'm Robert Osborne of Roseville. I have a PhD in comparative and international education from our University of Minnesota. I specialize in intercultural competence at the university. I've worked with international students, one of whom is here today with me, for over 38 years, and for 7 years at the university I taught a course on religion and educational policy. There's much about this bill to like, but I'm very concerned about the fact that that our bill is actually enforcing, or at least as originally designed, encouraging and enforcing an ideology that violates our nation's First Amendment. I know that you passed an amendment just earlier in this, a few minutes ago, in which you deleted the word critical, but I want to make sure that you understand that the word critical, as used in the original legislation, mandates an ideologically loaded version of ethnic studies that violates our First Amendment, as I've already said. This language has deeply embedded within it postmodern assumptions that are not only at odds with what most Minnesotans believe, but it will pit Minnesotans against each other. As someone who also teaches a comparative worldviews course online, I can tell you that critical, that specifically the language critical, ethnic studies will force our teachers to promote a worldview that Christians, Muslims, Jews, Hindus, and Buddhists do not believe and do not want their taught to their children. So I'm glad that you've removed the language of critical in the amendment that was offered a few minutes ago. But I also strongly urge you to delete references at line 7.1 to power, race, gender, and class analysis, because this language on 7.1 also is the kind of language that comes from the critical theory school. And I encourage you to replace it with an approach of constructive ethnic studies that fosters an appreciation for the varied cultural backgrounds of Minnesotans, including many of those who've already presented here, and equip students to understand and analyze multiple points of view so that they can develop their own opinions. Minnesotans do not want to divide.
Wrap it up. Everybody's getting 2 minutes in your
All right, room. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Oh, you can say a final sentence if you need
to. All right, thank you. So I simply want to say that Minnesotans want an ethnic studies curriculum that brings us together instead of dividing us, and it do not want an illiberal ideology forced on our students. Thank you.
Thank you. As a reminder, members, there is materials out in the hallway that actually show the amendment so people can see all the work that we've done, and it's also posted online. With that, we have Elfrida Baldwin. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
My name is Elfrida Baldwin. I am the chair of the board of Take Charge Minnesota. Take Charge is committed to countering the narrative that America is structured to undermine the lives of Black Americans. Assuming that this bill is necessary and beneficial goes out of the window because of the definition of ethnic studies. I wouldn't have a problem if the term referred to teaching students about different groups, history, language, and way of life. But this bill states ethnic studies analyzes the ways in which race and racism have been and continue to be powerful social, cultural, and political forces. This isn't an ethnic studies bill. It is a critical social justice bill that will strip students of their individuality and slot them into the role of either victim or victimizer, depending on their skin color. Throw in a little intersectionality, and schools will have to teach children as young as 5 a cynical and demoralizing worldview. As a Black woman, I put myself in the place of the Black children who will have to sit in a classroom full of white people and be taught that white people have all the power and control. I can well imagine the feelings of rage and hopelessness these students will experience. As the grandmother of mixed-race grandchildren, it makes me livid to think of the mixed-race children who will have to pick a side and be told that they are either oppressed or an oppressor. What a hateful and confusing message. As someone who cares about the well-being of all children, I think it is wicked to tell white students that no matter their life circumstances, their skin color has conferred upon them unearned privilege. And what a horrible thing to poison the minds of other students of color by exposing them to the corrosive ideology inherent in this twisted version of ethnic studies. Our system is producing students who lack the basic skills and knowledge to become productive and responsible citizens. This flawed version of ethnic studies won't fix any of those problems. Instead, precious time and financial resources will be invested in teaching students to distrust and despise one another. This bill, in its current form, should never make it out of this committee.
Thank you. Next up, we are going to have Jeff Peterson and Will Johnson. And members, I think I've failed you as the chair today of setting a floor of decorum in the way we're going to treat each other and have a constructive conversation. So let's just tone the rhetoric a little bit down and tone the name calling down. Otherwise, I'll have to do a course correction. With that, we have Jeff Peterson and Will Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Jeff Peterson. I'm a volunteer with FAIR, the Foundation Against Intolerance and Racism. FAIR is dedicated to advancing civil rights for all Americans and promoting a common culture based on fairness, understanding, and humanity. We don't believe this bill upholds those objectives. We believe the future depends on our ability to teach children habits and values necessary to the proper functioning of liberal democracy. This includes a fact-based and honest account of our nation's history, both its revolutionary founding promise of freedom and equality, as well as times where we have failed to keep that promise. This bill would have Minnesota schools teach a version of ethnic studies known as liberated ethnic studies, which is heavily focused on race consciousness and identity politics. Liberated ethnic studies alienate students from our institutions, emphasize vulnerabilities rather than agency, and heightens awareness of group differences. This liberated approach seeks to delegitimize ideas that rest at the core of American identity: individual merit, the rule of law, and compromise through reasoned discussion. In contrast, we believe the vast majority of Minnesota parents favor an inclusive approach to ethnic studies that broadens the students' understanding of the important contributions made by people of all ethnic backgrounds. This advances, inclusive ethnic studies advances the constructive view that an individual's personal characteristics such as character, personality, interests, and talents contribute substantially to their future purpose and success. In conclusion, we believed there are more inclusive and positive ways to honor students' heritage while maintaining a shared academic culture, and ask you to reject this bill. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Next up, Will Johnson, then Lisa Atkinson, and then Hillary Swanson on deck. Go ahead, state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Will Johnson, and a parent of school-age kids here in Minnesota. So we all agree that students should learn about different cultures, their challenges, and contributions to America, and have the understanding that comes from this. I hope my kids' school continues to teach that, and that other schools across the state do the same. And this is often how ethnic studies is being portrayed to the public in this bill. But what's being mandated in this bill is something different. Groups like Education for Liberation Minnesota are heavily involved in advancing this legislation. And they describe ethnic studies as a political struggle, claiming that Minnesota's, quote, state-run education system is founded on white supremacy and functions in a twisted partnership with the criminal injustice system and the other and other oppressive structures, close quote, stating that those structures should be dismantled. They also suggest that we should reject capitalism and concepts of, quote, merit and ability. Do our teachers and taxpayers who fund our schools believe that? And do we want schools to train our kids in this regressive mentality? And we see these sentiments in the bill's definition of ethnic studies and in the curriculum it mandates, stating as fact that a child's immutable traits divide them from others and dictates the power they have and what they're able to achieve in today's America. Training kids to stereotype and discouraging belief that they're individuals with agency, how is that inclusive? And how is that progressive? It's no surprise that a recent poll showed the majority of Minnesotans reject this brand of ethnic studies once they realize what it actually is. So when we discuss this bill, let's be clear about what we're mandating here. Is ethnic studies teaching kids about the history, the real challenges, the real contributions of cultures that compose America in a full, unifying, and uplifting way? Or is it as the bill and its influencers suggest, training kids to divide and stereotype based on race, to believe these traits place them on a hierarchy, and to be activists to dismantle for one-sided political causes? Which version reflects Minnesota values and prepares all kids to thrive? Thank you.
Next up, we have Lisa Atkinson, Hillary Swanson, and then on deck, Charlie Trier. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you. My name is Lisa Atkinson. I am a business executive, a wife, a mother of three children, and a school board director. This bill requires that all students, kindergarten through 12th grade, receive instruction on ethnic studies. I am against this bill for the following reasons. We know Minnesota students are struggling, and state proficiency scores have plummeted. So why would the state mandate a class that is not focused on the core fundamentals of reading, writing, and science versus political ideologies? This is my son's senior year and his first normal year in high school. He experienced 2 years of COVID and 1 year of disruptive, anti-racist political agendas being driven by a local BLM activist. My son's not a racist. He is brilliant, special, talented, and gifted student who struggles to find classes that meet his needs and understands where he fits in. Given the anti-racist agenda and the division that was created last year, my son experienced his worst year academically and has struggled since with serious mental health challenges, wondering where does he fit in? Is he part of a racist problem that does not exist? We have over 100 posters in our high school reminding him daily he needs to be the change and racism. With 1 in 30 kids diagnosed as autistic in our world today, it is more important now than ever to teach our kids how to come together, celebrate our differences, maintain and build healthy relationships, and provide students with the resources they need to succeed. As I walked into the Capitol building today, I noticed that this beautiful building is surrounded by Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard. Do you believe the way that ethnic studies is presented in this bill is the teaching of different cultures and follows the values of Dr. Martin Luther King? I have a dream that my four little children will live one day in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of the character. That's what ethnic studies should be. But the way that this bill is written, also referred to as liberated ethnic studies,
please wrap it up, you're over 2 minutes,
is radically ideology, focused on select cultures, aimed to create segregation, and further have a major impact on every student's ability to succeed. Please vote no for this bill and reallocate the funding to the basic education formula to allow independent school districts to make decisions based on the needs of their community versus mandates by the state. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Next up, we have Hillary Swanson, and then we'll go to remote testifier, and then questions. As a reminder, please stick to the 2 minutes. Thank you.
Hillary Swanson. I'm a lifetime resident of Minnesota and a product of Minnesota public education. I attended Webster Magnet School, the first magnet school west of the Mississippi from 1977 to 1983. The goal of Webster was to desegregate school on a voluntary basis while providing top-notch education for its students. Children of diverse backgrounds were bused citywide to Webster. We were exposed academically to the best that education could offer. Most of my teachers were white. But that is not what impacted me. What impacted me was seeing Mr. Berichter, my sixth grade teacher, play basketball with my dad on the school court some weekends. What impacted me was the high expectation my teachers had for me and the opportunity to learn how to think critically. Colin Powell, Condoleezza Rice, Ben Carson, Shirley Chisholm, Oprah Winfrey, Mae Jemison, Jackie Robinson, Booker T. Washington, Washington Carver, Madam C.J. Walker, Beverly Johnson, and President Barack Obama. Each person I named was the first black individual to do something that no black person had done before them. They were pioneers because they believed in their own agency, and they shared humanity with others, regardless of skin color. Success in academics or any other field is not about needing to be taught by somebody who looks like you. It's about seeing good attributes and worthy character traits in another, regardless of skin color, and embracing that. It's the moral fortitude, the beauty, and dignity that is to be sought after and embraced and embodied by the teacher and mirrored by the student. The SPPS data for 2022 shows that only 34% of students are proficient at reading, 25% at science, and 25% at math. The focus on ethnic studies won't improve these numbers. It focuses on deceptively teaching children that their country is bereft of any good, and depending on the color of their skin, they're either a victor or a victim. It seeks to divide children, twist the logic, and uphold extremist agendas under the guise of inclusivity. That's not what I learned at Webster. It's not what I learned at home. I am what it means to be black in America, and I will not allow anyone to tell me that they have privilege over me. Get rid of everything having to do with CRT.
Please wrap it up. It's been over 2 minutes.
Yes, ma'am. And teach our kids in an uplifting and unifying way. Raise your expectations and theirs. You owe it to them.
Next up, we have Charlie Tyree remotely. Please state your name for the record and proceed. And I'm sorry that I probably said that wrong.
No problem. Thank you. Good morning, Madam Chair and House Education Finance members of the committee. My name is Charlie Tyree, and I am a community organizer with Educators for Excellence. I will be reading a statement from a teacher at Henry High School, and I'll start now. Quote, my name is Philip Adenity. I am a social studies teacher at Henry High School in Minneapolis. This year is my first year teaching African American studies. I am testifying in support of Bill HF 1502. As a lover of history, a black person, and a Nigerian American, I constantly pursued knowledge of the beautiful African diaspora and its history. Unfortunately, there was little space to learn in any part of my education before college. I did not have any ethnic studies growing up in Minnesota, so I tried to find it out myself. This pursuit of knowledge led me to being a teacher. However, I am empowered now to know that it should not have been this hard to find out my history and the true, clear history of this country. I need everyone who is fighting for this bill and everyone who is fighting against this bill to understand the harm done by the omission of these topics in your own education. Think about how it impacted the people you think about and the communities you fight for. If you do not learn about African American people, African American history, African American resistance in the face of oppression, and the current realities of all Black people, how will you actually value their complex existence as human beings and their human rights? I echo this sentiment for Native people, Native history, Native resistance, Asian American people, Asian American history, Asian American resistance, Latine people, Latine history, Latine resistance. I separate these groups out not to be repetitive, but to acknowledge their unique realities that have similar roots. Ethnic studies strengthen students' identity development, benefit both students of color and white students alike, and teach all students to value their history, the history of others, and push all of us to create a better, more equitable society. I want to see a day when all students have the complete and true knowledge to make active change in this country. As a teacher and a citizen, I greatly encourage you all to support Bill HF 1502. Thank you. Close quote.
Thank you so much for your testimony and bringing a voice to the table. Members, we are going to move to the table for questions and comments. Reminder that we're focusing in on the fiscal section, and also a reminder that we should be treating each other respectfully. So, and that we have to wrap up in about 10 minutes. So, Representative Perez-Vega.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Senator Mura. This is the work that has been put together for so many decades. So many decades by educators, leaders of education, nationally and locally, and the movements that we come from, and the parents that raised us. It is an honor to co-author this with you. As an educator with a cultural studies background, who knows about our history, who knows about the reality, we need the financial support to go towards this, not only for our educators, but most in particular for our students. We were those students. We were the students that recognized that we had a passion to teach because we made it out of a system that did not include us. We learned the histories of having those dreams that Martin Luther King spoke about, and learning that it took those movements that we came from to have Dr. Martin Luther King boulevards, to have Cesar Chavez streets, to have the advocacies that we do have in what we're trying to excel into higher education that's struggling so much in this state. Why do we have to wait to become the cultural studies majors? Why aren't we becoming the cultural advocacies so that we aren't repeating the cycles of trauma that we have survived? Surviving your teachers calling the way that your shoes coming with profanity and words that sting, that come from the nature of slashes and whips and backs of African-American slavery, that comes from the genocide that we heard in the bill before this. These are the steps of healing, not just for Black, brown, whatever BIPOC alphabet letter, whatever alphabet mafia you want to say that we are. This is about curating a full circle. I come from mixed race. I come from the darkest shade of brown, like I said yesterday, where I heard a speech that was repeated from yesterday. I'm going to say mine again. From the darkest shade of brown to the lightest. I know what the complexities happen when we talk about segregation from in my own family, okay, that speaks the same languages. And we are also able to connect and supporting each other by recognizing what privilege is. Privilege is knowledge. I quote the Dr. Albizu Campos of Puerto Rico, who was an educator, Harvard graduate, the first Black Puerto Rican to graduate Harvard Law School, who stated, and I want this because this is something that I learned that should be a part of our curriculum so that we can all learn, whether it is my colleague right here to my right or to my left, and our children learning in the system together. I appreciate your patience because this is what advises me and gives us the hope in these bills that we're presenting here like this one today. The youth has the duty to defend the homeland and their knowledge. The youth has a duty to defend their homeland and educations with the weapons of knowledge. We're living in a world where kids are using actual weapons to take out their mental capacities and their traumas. Why don't we recognize weapons of peace with what this bill brings here today? Not separation, but harmony, so that we can heal and fulfill the gaps, fulfill those wounds, put a surgical heart back into the soul of what it is to grow in our kids, not tear us apart. When you're called the N-word, the S-word, all of these words in your schools by your teachers, these are the ways to be able to unify, to grow, and heal for the next generation, so that my daughter and that your children don't have to go through that. For our, regardless of what color your skin is, it's to stand up for our histories to be the truth and the facts. Thank you.
Thank you, members. Just a quick reminder, we need to finish up this bill in about 5 minutes so that we can move on, but I want to give people time to talk as well. Representative Ream, briefly.
Thank you, Chair Joachim, and thank you, Representative Senator Mira, for bringing us forward. Lot of charged feelings in this room. It was in the late 80s that I think the word xenophobia came into play, and I think that's what I'm seeing here, a lot of xenophobia, a lot of fear of what this might do in our schools, what it's going to teach. But I think, the student from Henry High School said, this ethnic studies will teach all students to value their history. It's not about teaching kids that they're less or greater than another. It's about teaching history. And I think we need to keep that in mind. I do have a question. Mm-hmm. I'm curious about languages being taught in schools, and if that, let's say we have a student who has studied the Chinese language or the Somali language. When you're looking at the ethnic studies requirement, is there anything that would replace that? Or is it, because I know I look in here and it says it's a bill that will be comprehensive, you know, that would teach about all the different areas of the world and all the different cultures. And I'm just curious if there's anything that would also be part of that, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Representative.
And I very much appreciate this bill and I support it, but thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative Senator Mira.
Thank you, Representative Ring, for the question. You know, so I think what we are trying to do with this bill is both ensure that students across our state have access to this kind of curriculum and give a lot of flexibility to local districts to kind of think about what works with your student population, what are the needs of your student population. And so, you know, I think MDE already has a list on their website of different courses around our state that would fit an ethnic studies requirement. I believe that some of those are language and culture courses. So I believe there are like Somali language and culture courses. I don't know that just a language course by itself would meet the requirements. But part of that is, you know, part of that's why we want to have this bill and get this work group together, is that we have some folks who are kind of thinking about, you know, what are the different ways that this can intersect with other disciplines, with other academic content areas. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up, I have Altendorf, Purcell, Kreisha, and then Clardy, and then we're moving on. So, Representative Altendorf.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Senator Mira. I appreciate you reaching out to me and, you know, coming to my office and sitting down and really discussing this. I really do. It was really an act of, for us to try to come together on this. And I think that's what we all want, right? You know, we are such a divided country right now. And I can just feel the pain and the anguish of the testifiers on both sides. We are a nation. We are a state. Our education system is clashing. And I want to thank everyone that testified today. Truly, I don't know that I could say it better than everyone that testified. It's not that we do not want to educate our children, and that needs to stop. That needs to stop being said that we're trying to suppress history. I don't think that's true. I think more education is better, and I think that's everyone agrees with that. What we're against is the division and the division that this causes. And we also need to look at history, and there are political agendas to divide countries and to tear us apart. In America, I grew up believing, even being a woman at that time, you know, that it wasn't a woman-dominated country. I truly believed that I could do anything, that if I went to school and I worked hard, that I could do anything. And these are the sense that we cause division, we continue to fight each other. How can we build each other up? How can we build women up, people of color up, people of religions up? How can we build each other up together? That truly is the question. You know, going back to Martin Luther King Jr., he really preached about love and unity, and that's what I would like to see us move together on, not embracing things that continue to cause division. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Purcell. Thank
you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Sensenmura, for bringing this bill. I have just learned so much from your leadership and from the leadership of other Posse Caucus members. Happy to follow your lead on this. As a parent, as a child of two educators, I mean, I look at education of wanting us to think critically, to be curious, and to be uncomfortable. That's the growth edge. That's for sports. That's for learning. That's for anything. And I'm not worried about my two white boys in the public school system in Minnesota. I'm not. What I'm worried about is the opportunity gap that we see as Minnesota being the worst in the country. And we are looking, we are a finance committee, and we are looking at how to close that gap. And I hope that students being able to hear and handle the truth of how we got to this point, we owe them that. I am optimistic every time I get to hang out with young people. They are much wiser and going to go a lot further than us, and the least we can do is support them. And Representative Altendorf was asking about if we can build each other up. I absolutely believe in that, and that is every child, not just the children who look like mine. So I thank you for this. I thank you for your leadership. And I'm pleased to support it. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Krishna.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The last couple comments have actually changed where I was going to go with this. I just want to say to the testifiers, thank you. And if you have your emails, leave them certainly with the committee so we can contact you or you can reach out to us. I just thought I would add, I know that there's a lot here. And again, this is another heavy conversation. It's an important conversation. And trying to give you support, Madam Chair, you had said, you know, trying to keep the decorum and keep us moving, and you mentioned keeping us to the financials. I actually think by you allowing us to get into more third reading type speeches and talk through this on both sides is getting us to a better understanding. So I just want to add that, and I'll leave it at that.
Thank you. Representative Clardy.
Thank you so much for bringing this bill here. I had to wait to go to get to college to have a class like this. I'm coming from a point of being a mother, being a teacher, being a school board member. And the counter story of some of this is we are investing in our kids. We in Minnesota have a large achievement opportunity or achievement gap, however you want to look at it. And this bill is, it's specific to education in the sense that children have to read. Children have to write. Children have to research. And these are some of the areas that we're having gaps in. And so why not have it content specific so they're actually practicing the exercise of reading, writing, and critical thinking? So this is exactly what we need at this time. So I just want to say thank you. And it's very meaningful to me. It was just within the last few years that growing up in Minnesota that I found out about some of the inequities that were happening, like the lynching in Duluth, you know, with as a Black American Minnesotan, I never knew about that. Or even like I had to go to Mankato to find out about what happened to the Native Americans. So I think that this is nice, and I think it's that it's in context and it allows students and families to help them work through that critical thinking process. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Clardy. With that, Representative Sensenmura, final comments.
Thank you. And I was all prepared to talk about the fiscal note, Representative Krishna, because I thought you were going to bring us there, which I believe is still in the works. I'm happy to discuss more about the financials with anyone offline. I think I'll just, you know, end with a story that is kind of something that has been talked about in my family. So my dad grew up in a family of four siblings. He was the oldest. And the youngest sibling, they were having a conversation one day, and my dad was sharing that when he was a kid, his dad would use physical punishment on him. And my aunt said, my dad would never do that. And, you know, and the dad hadn't to her, right? That was not her experience, and she was shocked. And I say this to say that sometimes, you know, that feels like our experience of America, right? It's that one group says, this is my history, this is what happened, and the other group, largely, I believe, because of lack of education, says our country would never do that. I know that I have had that experience as a Japanese-American whose family was interned during World War II, a family that really believed in the American dream, and then overnight had what they were building here in this country transformed and taken away from them and has changed the legacy and the history of my family. I really appreciate the conversation today. I really appreciate all the testifiers who are here. I appreciate all the conversations that I've had about this bill. I think it has challenged us to think more about this topic. How do we bring more people into this discussion? How do we present this content in a way that is going to be inclusive rather than divisive? And, you know, I think that this bill is just the start of that. But what I will say, and, you know, I heard some things today about what ethnic studies might do that was not true, that is not my understanding. But what I will say is that, you know, ethnic studies is about making sure that students' identities are recognized in the classroom, but also that their histories are recognized. And I know that as a young person in school, I often felt like my school was trying the best. They were trying to recognize my identity. They would say you could bring in a cultural dish, you could wear your cultural dress, but the history was not taught, and the history was not there. And to me, that didn't feel like a complete education. So that's what we're trying here with ethnic studies. Thank you all for listening. Thank you for the discussion, and looking forward for a continued conversation. And with that, I move to for possible inclusion of this bill in the omnibus. Thank you.
Thank you. With that, Representative Sensenmura, we are moving, laying over House File 1502 as amended. And moving on to our next bill, we have Representative Lee here, House File 759. And members, I'll remind everybody, we are going to try to do, we have a hard stop at 12:45, but I really want us done before that. So we're going to keep test fires as tight as we can and move on. So Representative Lee, welcome to the Education Finance Committee. I see, why don't we have Representative Clardy, can you move House File 759 before the committee?
So moved.
And Representative Clardy moves House File 759 before the committee. Could you also move the A3 amendment in front of the committee?
Moved also.
Thank you, Vice Chair Clardy. With that, Representative Lee, go ahead and why don't you briefly explain the A3 amendment?
Great. Thank you, Chair Joachim and members. So the A3 amendment has some technical changes as we've had conversations with MDE, and it also adds more folks to the working group because of various conversations that we've had. We wanted to make sure we have representation among students and teachers in the working group.
Thank you. That's the A3 amendment. Anybody have any questions on the A3 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those in favor say, all those opposed say no. The A3 amendment is adopted. Now the bill's in the shape that you would like. Could you please proceed?
Great. Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. We are pleased to present before you today House File 759 as amended. As you probably know, it's the first step in streamlining computer science courses across Minnesota schools. Given the short amount of time we have, I'm just going to quickly thank some of the folks who are here who've been working on this bill for a very, very long time. This bill has been introduced many times before. It was also been introduced by folks like Rep. Steve Elkins, former Representative Jim Dabney. It's also been bipartisan before, but this year the bill has changed a little bit because it does three key things. Most important, like I discussed earlier because of the amendment, it establishes a working group through the Department of Education that would create a strategic plan to make sure that we streamline computer science courses across all of our schools so that every student has equitable access. The bill also provides $4 million each year for teacher training and $4 million to support school districts and other school-adjacent programs that are already in existence. With that, I'm going to yield the rest of my time to my testifiers today.
Thank you so much. With that, we have, I'm just getting to the right spot, Tess Campion, then Jen Rosado, and then Hannah Wiseman. Go ahead and state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and the members of the committee. I'm here to testify in support of House File 759. My name is Tess Campion, and I'm an 11th grader at Open World Learning Community, a St. Paul public school. I took my first computer science course in 9th grade. However, I was originally exposed to programming in my 5th grade math class. In this class, my peers and I used Scratch, a block-based coding program to create rudimentary video games. My teacher's enthusiasm and support for student creativity was what sparked my interest in STEM. That same year, I participated in FIRST LEGO League, working with my classmates to build and program small robots. My team advanced to state, something that wouldn't have happened without the encouragement from our teacher. Because of my positive experience in elementary school, I participated in LEGO League all through my middle school years, and with my team, won the programming award for our district. LEGO League introduced me to and nurtured my interest in programming. And because of this, I was excited to have the opportunity to take AP Computer Science A as a high schooler. Taking the computer science course was the first time many of my peers and I were exposed to Java, one of the most common programming languages. Having the ability to develop my interest in programming while learning a relevant skill made this one of the most valuable classes I've taken. At my high school, only two computer science classes are available, both of which are offered on an every year basis due to a small number of qualified teachers. Last year, I hoped to take computer science principles, but ultimately did not after learning I would have to drop my math class to do so. My computer science class taught me a creative approach to problem solving, something I use across all subjects. It also empowered me to become the programming captain of the robotics team at my school. In this role, I am able to use leadership skills and collaborate with teammates to write code that is applicable in real-world scenarios. My classmates and my experience in computer science in St. Paul Public Schools has pushed us to take more innovative approaches to challenges and given us the confidence to solve problems we face in a technological society. The creative thinking skills we learn merit a place in curriculums everywhere, but many students don't have the same opportunities we do. Although my experience has been limited, I am privileged to have the opportunity to take computer science courses at my school, something everyone in the state of Minnesota deserves. Thank you for taking the time to hear my testimony today.
Thank you so much. Next up, state your name for the record and proceed.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of House File 759. My name is Jennifer Rosado, and I'm the director of the National Center for Computer Science Education, housed at the College of St. Scholastica. For over 20 years, I have been focused on efforts to broaden participation in computing in K-12 and higher education, including organizing computer science professional development for teachers in Minnesota and across the country. Today, I'm speaking on behalf of CS for All Minnesota, a coalition of diverse stakeholders which advocates for policies to increase access, participation, and engagement in computing. This context has informed the bill and request for a $4 million annual fund. As you may have heard, Minnesota is last in the nation in computing, with only 21% of high schools offering a foundational computer science course. The funding proposed in this bill is necessary to support change in our education systems at the state, district, school, and even higher education levels. To enact sustainable change, we need to build capacity for all educators, including in pre-service programs, as very few have any formal education in computing. Minnesota has established organizations ready to support this work across the state, including my center, CodeSavvy and Code.org, SIMFMIN, and others. The $4 million fund amount is based on Minnesota's size and our expertise in computer science ed. At the center, we've been working closely with three Minnesota districts to create a computer science pathway, Duluth, Hermantown, and Fond du Lac Ojibwe School. These efforts have required approximately $100,000 per year per district to support district planning, teacher professional development, and materials. It also takes external expertise and time. All of the schools have commented on how critical guidance from the center has been in their initiatives. And while each school has developed initial pathways in just a few years, there is more work to do to ensure equity and inclusion in computer science. And that really is our goal with this bill. We want to ensure that every child in Minnesota has access to high-quality computer science education throughout their K-12 experience so that we can prepare the next generation of technology creators and informed citizens that can contribute to our technology-dependent society. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Hannah Wiseman is next up. Go ahead and state your name for the record and proceed.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Hannah Weissman, and I'm the Director of Policy at Code.org, which is a national nonprofit working on expanding access to K-12 computer science education. And House File 759 builds on the Grasswork Network that is developed in Minnesota to create a strong and sustaining foundation for computer science education. And at Code.org, we have seen the impact of legislation similar to House File 759 in other states. In Iowa, for example, they have allocated $3 million to computer science education, and the result of this investment has been striking. 71% of Iowa schools now offer computer science, which is a 20% increase from before they allocated such funding. And this funding has helped train teachers across Iowa, and importantly, it's eliminated gaps in both rural schools and small schools in Iowa. It is important to note that Minnesota is almost double the population of Iowa, and and our students have less access to computer science than Iowa when they began investing. So we need to make this large investment in computer science education if we're going to catch up to Iowa and indeed surpass. In the materials submitted to support this legislation, you will see a finance explainer that details recommendations for how the funding is spent. This explainer was created with diverse stakeholder input and incorporates MDE's budget ask. You will also see in these materials examples of six other states with similar populations to Minnesota. While I don't have time to go through all six of these states, you'll note that all of them make a multi-year and sustained investment in computer science. And the results are clear. Not only has the percent of high schools offering computer science grown, but we are seeing increasing rates of participation for female students, Black students, Hispanic students, and Indigenous students. I would like to close by saying that you have heard from three stakeholders today, and we represent the broad spectrum of support for this legislation across Minnesota. As you can see from the letters of support, there are teachers, students, parents, higher ed, nonprofits, and the business community supporting this legislation. And I want to thank Representative Lee for her leadership in this crucial subject for our students and for all of you for the time today. So I urge you to support House File 759.
Thank you so much. With that, members, I'll go to the table for comments or questions. Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Lee, for bringing this bill. So I guess I have a couple of questions that maybe you can speak to. One is I'm wondering, like, we're hearing about these other states, particularly a neighboring state who's ahead of us on this. So why haven't more districts in Minnesota been doing this in K through 12? And is this a scalable
addition?
Thank you.
Yes, very good question. I think there have been some school districts that have found funding to do this haphazardly, but I think our goal is to help every school or school district in the state, just because it's going to be such an important part, important skill for our kids who are the workforce of the future. But happy to also defer to my testifiers.
Yeah, I can jump in really quickly. Again, Hannah Weissman. From a national perspective, a lot of school districts, they need this funding, they need the support. Parents are excited about this, teachers are excited, but they need that support and training. And so we see in other states when they make a priority on the state level, like Iowa, like Wisconsin, like the Dakotas, that there is real progress made. And we just haven't made that a priority in Minnesota. We actually used to be a leader in computer science education. The Oregon Trail game actually came out of Minnesota, and that was back in the 80s, but we haven't made that investment since then. So we have a history, and we can certainly draw on that to reinvest, as Representative Lita said, and to certainly get at least close to Iowa, if not past it.
Representative Purcell, follow up. All right, Representative Edelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Lee. I'm such a huge fan of this bill. My kids have done robotics, and I can tell you it's incredibly expensive. I know that you had a testifier talking about Lego League, and we have heard from robotic competitions all throughout the state of Minnesota just how inequitable it is. But we also know that students going into those fields are really high-paying jobs. So your bill does such a great job of making sure there's equity and access. And so just thank you. And I really do just want to highlight the importance of getting that money out in 2024. So thank you.
Thank you. Members, any other questions or comments? Seeing none, Representative Lee, final word.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To be very quick, this is a good bill. I know our parents, our teachers, our kids want it, and also our business community is asking for it because our workforce has to be ready and competitive for our 21st century economy. And I hope you will consider it for inclusion. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll move House File 759 as amended to be laid over for possible inclusion in an education finance bill. With that, we have Representative Hassan, who's been patiently waiting. Thank you so much. Representative Hassan has House File 651. Vice Chair Clardy, will you move House File 651 before us?
So moved.
Thank you, Vice Chair Clardy. With that, too, we also have an A2 amendment. Would you like to move that before us as well?
So moved.
Thank you. So we have A2 amendment before us. Representative Hassan, welcome back to the Education Finance Committee. Would you briefly speak to the A2 amendment?
Madam Chair and members, thank you for the opportunity to appear before you today. I believe the A2 amendment, if I'm not mistaken, is the we're changing the algebra language. Is that what it is? Yep. So we heard from school districts and advocates that we were going to use the algebra 2 as an alternative for taking personal finance course. And it doesn't work out the way that it's structured. So we're going to leave the algebra 2 and then it's any other math after that, if it's my understanding.
Thank you, Representative Hassan. Members, any questions on the A2 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. The A2 amendment has been adopted. Representative Hassan, go ahead and introduce your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I mean, I have a whole lot of energy. Today is first day of Ramadan, so Madam Chair and members, thank you for the opportunity to present House File 651, which is requires high school students to take personal finance course before graduation. You might ask, why is this important? Our students deserve to get a well-rounded education and be ready for the real world when they finish high school. There are tons of research behind the importance of learning personal finances. Simply, it's the difference between living a healthier, happier, and more stable life versus poverty and depression and being stuck in the stress of financial crisis. If somebody understands the fundamentals of budgeting, saving, debt, and investing, it will impact every part of their life. I have vice chaired the education policy in the last 2 years prior to this. My chair and I spent time doing town halls across the state of Minnesota. We did about 12 town halls, and each town hall that we were attending, young people talked about the importance of personal finance. That's why this bill is before us. And with that, Madam Chair, I have great testifiers who will also speak on this, and we will stand for questions.
Great. We have Dr. Julie Bunn and then David Broughton. Why don't you go ahead and state your name for the
amendment? Madam Chair and members, my name is Julie Bunn. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Council on Economic Education. I speak today as one of several facilitators of collaborative efforts to develop and advocate for this bill. I will make several brief points to provide context. First, over the past decade, a national movement has emerged to promote the adoption of personal finance courses for high school graduation. As of this last fall, 17 states have now adopted this requirement. Why is this occurring? There are three primary reasons. First, the research on the benefits of a substantive semester equivalent course is extraordinarily strong. Student financial behaviors and decision making are changed over the short and long run, affecting their credit, debt, use of banking, investment, and other behaviors. Additionally, there's a trickle-up effect to student families. The knowledge acquired gets carried home and transferred to parents, and this is particularly important for BIPOC and recent immigrant families. Second, and very importantly, the national research comparing outcomes for states that require courses to those that have loose standards and embedded content shows that where only standards exist, schools with whiter and wealthier student populations provide more access to personal finance than those with more diverse and lower income populations. So it's a serious equity issue involved here. Third, there's strong public support for the required course at the high school level. National and Minnesota polls place support at the high 80 to low 90% approval levels. Over a year ago now, Minnesota leaders in the nonprofit and private sectors set in motion a two-pronged process that resulted in the bill before you today, and the long list of endorsing organizations that you can find on the first page of the packet of this bill have lined up over the last year or so. This includes ethnic councils, finance, realty, mortgage, and nonprofits working in this financial literacy space. The first part of this process was teacher organizations leaders formed a work group to understand the research on financial literacy education at the high school level, to research the components of the bills in other states, and to work to come to consensus on language for a bill appropriate to Minnesota. This group involved the leaders of the business teachers, family and consumer science teachers, social studies teachers, and the Minnesota Council on Economic Education. They've come to agreement on the language before you today, not to say that all their members agree on it, but the leadership of their organizations reached a consensus around it. Simultaneous to this effort, the work group process, a coalition of interested parties and advocates from the financial and wealth management, advising, insurance, and realty sectors, as well as these nonprofits I mentioned, formed to work to advocate for the bill. The goal of all these efforts is to pass a semester equivalent course requirement with quality content taught by qualified teachers, but beyond that, to leave as much leeway and flexibility for districts and students as possible to comply with the requirement. Those were our goals. Be glad to answer questions. I thank you for your conversation, and I hope you will agree to support this legislation.
Thank you, Dr. Bunn. Next up, David Bratton. Welcome to the Education Finance Committee.
Thank you, Chair.
I had the pleasure of being a para in the high school where Mr. Yes. Bratton taught it. So yes. Go ahead. Proceed. State your name for the record and proceed.
Chair Yochim and committee members, my name is David Bratton, and I'm a business education teacher at Hopkins High School, speaking in support of House File 651. I'm proud to say that I had the opportunity to be a part of one of the first school districts in Minnesota to offer personal finance as required standalone high school course for graduation. Hopkins School District's journey of requiring personal finance as a graduation requirement began through our district strategic planning work back in 2008 through 10. Through this process, the planning committee determined that students not only be literate in such things as math or reading or language, but also in financial concepts. We also recognized at that time the critical economic situation of our country and felt our district should be responsive to real-life matters of our students and their future. Further, we believe proper financial education is an equity issue. It is needed to help level the playing field for all of our students and to help end the cycle of generational poverty. Throughout the past 10 years, I've received endless examples of student-parent feedback validating the importance of financial education. I've heard several times that this is one of the most important classes I've ever taken. It's all about real life. I can recall a specific example of a student whose family was unbanked and soon realized the importance of his single mother doing her own 1040 tax return after having learned about taxes himself and how to complete the 1040 in class. He realized that his mother would most likely get much of her federal and state money back. He was eager to help her with this task as every dollar was important to his family. What a rewarding moment to see direct relevance of classroom learning to real-world application. For us at Hopkins High School, we addressed early on the need to have this course be taught as a standalone course with intention by teachers who are trained and passionate about teaching this curriculum. We believed it was important for this course content to not just be embedded in other already saturated course curriculums, as it does not give most students adequate financial training. Lastly, we know there are endless examples depicting the lack of adequate training on financial education in our country. In many schools, it appears to be a very hit-and-miss approach to teaching this literacy. It's time we recognize that financial education is not optional but critical for our students as young adults. That's Hopkins' story. We need to now ensure that all schools in the state of Minnesota have a similar story. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up, we have Lois Lewis on remote. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Lois Lewis, that's spelled L-O-I-S-L-E-W-I-S, and for 36 years I have taught Family and Consumer Sciences at Indus School, which is in rural northern Minnesota, in Birchdale, and also taught in the Minnesota Extension Service. I have a certification in personal and family financial education through the American Association of Family and Consumer Sciences. I'm speaking in support of House File 651. Indus School also requires a semester of personal finance for graduation. Personal finance is so valuable because it helps students to make informed choices as they go out on their own, whether to work or college. There's a lot to know these days about living on your own, especially in my case, for rural kids moving to cities for the first time. Even for those who don't go to college, financial education in high school is significantly associated with positive financial behavior. Financial difficulties can lead to stress, depression, relationship problems, and even suicide. So some personal finance knowledge can help students to set goals, make good decisions, and handle money responsibly. Some students lack any guidance from their parents about money. In fact, their parents sometimes say they wish they had had personal finance education. Even if student financial experiences are negative, however, students can change the pattern and work toward financial well-being in a personal finance class. High school students are just starting to get jobs and to realize how far their money will go. A personal finance class gives them a reality check on how much it will cost them for the lifestyle they seek. They can contrast and compare financial options and define their own visions of financial well-being on their cultural or ethnic beliefs. It prepares them to be informed consumers who will ask questions instead of acting blindly. A personal finance class can include consumer rights and laws, banking, taxes and income, budgeting, savings and investing, debt, credit and identity protection, housing and transportation, insurance and financial careers. These are all part of 21st century skills, Family and Consumer Sciences Frameworks, and Career Pathways in Minnesota. And there are many free resources available to teach personal finance. In my opinion, every student should could benefit greatly by having a standalone, hands-on personal finance class with practical applications, discussion, field trips, guest presenters, and financial challenging opportunities such as personal finance decathlon. Thank you for your time. I hope you'll support this bill.
Thank you. Next up, we have Tej Bagra. Please state your name for the record.
Yes, my name is Tej Bagra, spelled T as in Tom, E-J, last name, B as in boy, H-A-G-R-A. And I'm a 15-year-old freshman attending Mayo High School in Rochester, Minnesota. I'm here to discuss my research on the strong need for financial literacy among high school students. A four-page summary of my research is included in your packet on the bill. I administered an anonymous survey to over 3,200 middle and high school students with questions related to their knowledge, attitudes, and practices regarding personal finance. I had more than 750 respondents. Out of these respondents, only 1 out of 4 students reported having taken a financial class. Additionally, nearly 80% of respondents were unaware of interest rates and savings accounts, even though a majority, with 70%, had a savings account. The respondents reported that their parents and guardians talked infrequently with them regarding personal financial literacy matters. There was a strong interest in taking a personal financial literacy class, with over 80% of the respondents desiring a mandatory personal finance class. Personal financial literacy is a critical life skill. Personal financial literacy helps students prepare for the future, and students need to make informed decisions about their money, such as managing their income, debt, investments, retirement, etc. By teaching financial literacy in schools, students can develop the skills they need to make intelligent and proper financial decisions as adults. At a societal level, financial literacy can help address financial inequality, as those with lower levels of financial literacy are more likely to experience financial hardship. By providing financial education in schools, students from all backgrounds can develop the knowledge and skills to make informed financial decisions. This will create a more financially responsible population that may be less likely to fall into poverty. And finally, personal financial literacy can enhance economic growth. Financial literacy could lead to more financially savvy individuals, which could contribute to business expansions and investments, which in turn would lead to a more stable and prosperous economy. In summary, financial education is a critical life skill. My research convincingly proved that there is a strong unmet desire for it among students, and I strongly recommend that a course in personal finance be required for high school graduation. Madam Chair and members of the committee, I thank you for your time.
Thank you for coming here from Rochester and providing us with a summary of all your research. With that, members, we'll move to the, there's no other further public testifiers signed up. We'll move to the table for comments or questions. Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you to all the testifiers. As a Mayo High School grad myself, keep up the great work. Thank you, Representative Hassan, for bringing this.
Any other further comments or questions, members? Seeing none, Representative Hassan, final word.
I think most people are kind to me because they know I didn't drink coffee today. Thank you, Madam Chair and members, for this great conversation. This is about equity. I grew up not knowing anything about money, and when I asked my mom how much money do we have, she would say, we have enough. Well, that's good for a young person's psychology. It does nothing to teach you about money. And there are many young people who are growing up in households that don't have any money, and parents don't want to, you know, stress their young kids about money and talking about money. But it's vital that our young people learn about money. It's vital that they plan and prepare themselves for the future. It's vital that they learn about investments and saving and spending and, you know, all of these different things. This is about, like I said, equity. It's about evening the playing field for everybody. It's for good for all our students. I hope you can support it by adding it to your omnibus bill. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Sun. With that, House File 651 is laid over as amended. Next up, we have our final bill, House File 1628. Representative Jordan, welcome to your committee. I'll let you get settled. And then feel free to move House File 1628 before the committee for possible inclusion in an education finance bill, and then move your DE2 amendment.
So moved, Madam Chair. And I also move the DE2 amendment. The DE2 amendment, Madam Chair, and members, is technical. It was written in conjunction with MDE to better get at the formula that we are examining today. So I ask for members' help to get the bill in the shape that it needs to be in.
Thank you. Members, any questions on the DE2 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. The DE2 amendment is adopted. The bill's in the shape you'd like. Go ahead and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Joachim, Vice Chair Cardi, and members. I'll be quick since I know all of us are committed to serving students where they're at, especially our students who need the most help. And I know that we all know that we have children in Minnesota who are homeless and highly mobile, and these are the students that need the most help. So this bill in the DE, which was just, like I said, working on with MDE, attempts to address the issue that many districts, including mine, around the state have with the special education aid formula. And when we, the legislature, rolled homeless care, treatment, and ALC transportation into the special education formula, the intent was to fully fund district costs. But for a number of districts, each year the state only funds 50 to 60% of those costs. And the 2016 overhaul of the special education formula added more complexity and did have an unintended impact, which says that from one year to the next, districts can move from the new formula to the old formula, depending on what happens to their student enrollment and their program costs. And so when the initial special education aid is calculated on the old formula, they're not fully reimbursed for their homeless care and treatment and ALC transportation costs. And so as a really profound example, Minneapolis Public Schools, which is my district that I proudly represent, shoulders a significant portion of our state's homeless student expenses. We have, in Minneapolis, do serve more homeless students as a percentage and as a raw number than any other district in the state, but we are not alone. And that means that in Minneapolis, we're often switching between the old and new formulas, and that has created a significant funding challenge. And my bill for this coming year doesn't actually help MPS, but in future years it could for districts that roll back and forth between the two formulas. For every district that moves between the old and new special education formula, this bill provides some assurance that they will continue to receive funding to cover homeless care, treatment, and ALC transportation costs. Mr. Strom is on hand to help explain the formula changes exactly. And I also have a really great testifier with me, Charlotte Kinsley, who is the Homeless and Highly Mobile Support Services Director for Minneapolis Public Schools, here to talk about what this bill would mean both for MPS but also for the students that she serves. So with that, Madam Chair, I think it would be good to just have Mr. Strom give us just a quick cliff notes and then go to testimony.
Thank you. Mr. Strom.
Madam Chair, members, the issue with the special education formula is there are a couple of different parts to it, and as Representative Jordan said, districts can switch between one of the calculations and another. There's essentially three different funding levels based on different characteristics. It's the least of those three that becomes the initial special education aid, and that amount is subject to a floor, and it's a two-part floor. And as Representative Jordan said, those that are limited by the 2016 amounts that have been adjusted since that time on a per pupil basis and on an inflation factor find themselves in the situation when their homeless transportation costs increase, that those costs are not 100% funded. For the remainder of the districts, 100% of that transportation cost is fully funded.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Strom. With that, we'll go to the testifiers. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you. Madam Chair, committee members, my name is Charlotte Kinsley, and I'm the Director of Homeless Highly Mobile Student Support at Minneapolis Public Schools. And I really thank you for authoring this House File 1628. So I just want to say a little bit about what this means for Minneapolis. So in Minneapolis, we're really grateful to be home to two of the largest homeless shelters in our state, People Serving People and Mary's Place. We're also one of only a handful of counties in the nation that have a right to shelter policy for families who are experiencing homelessness. We welcome all students and families to our district, and we work hard to ensure that they're immediately enrolled and receive support to remove any barriers for them accessing education during a period of instability. Students experiencing homelessness face some of the highest risk factors for not meeting really important academic milestones, like reading by third grade and graduating from high school. And on the flip side of that, not meeting those milestones also puts people at risk for experiencing homelessness as adults. So in order to stop sort of the generational cycle of homelessness, it needs to be interrupted. And one way that we do that is by keeping school consistent for students when they're having an experience with homelessness. That is a right that's protected by the McKinney-Vento Homeless Assistance Act, and we just need to make sure that it's funded. Caregivers and students in MPS consistently tell us that access to reliable transportation is the number one factor that enables them to consistently attend when they're experiencing homelessness. I want to give members just a quick glimpse of what this might look like for a family. So we have a family in MPS, Amber and her second grade daughter, Jasmine, who became homeless this fall. And since September, they have been moving between friends and family, staying as long as they were welcome, and then eventually when they ran out of options, ended up into an overflow hotel through Hennepin County out in Bloomington. And so recently they got into our Stable Home, Stable Schools program and now have an affordable unit. But during the 6 months that Jasmine experienced homelessness, we were transporting her from four different locations. Some were as far as 30 miles away, and many changed with little to no warning. That is very important for Jasmine because school for Jasmine is where her friends are. It's where she's learning to read. It's where she has healthy lunch every day. She has teachers that care about her, and she's got space to not worry about finding housing, which is something no 7-year-old should have to worry about. Jasmine did not have to miss any important lessons. She got to play at recess and didn't miss any family nights, and all of that is because of that consistent transportation that we're able to provide. So while Minneapolis may have the highest numbers of homeless students, this impacts every district across our state. And the predictability that this bill would allow for districts to be able to continue to provide this really needed service would be appreciated by districts across the state. So I thank you, Madam Chair, for hearing the bill, and thank you, Representative Jordan, for authoring it.
Thank you so much. With that, members, we'll go to questions and comments at the table. Representative Reed.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Jordan, for bringing this forward. I think we don't fully understand, you know, how important it is for kids to have transportation to school, you know, how important that is for them being able to attend school. And I appreciate this bill very much. I know in my community we have a homeless shelter. A lot of teens are in this shelter, and I've been told that, you know, some of them are from my area and some of them are from outside my district. So it makes sense that we need to fund the schools when they need to transport the kids. So thank you very much for bringing this forward. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Representative Green. With that, Representative Kusha.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Strom, so tell me a little bit about the funding. So would this be permanent base funding? Would this be variable? I'm looking. I don't see any of the fiscal information on this. How does that impact it?
Mr. Strom.
Madam Chair, Representative Kreshen, yes, there would be a fiscal impact that would be built into the special education costs as all school districts, regardless which of the combinations of three funding sources and two floors, would receive 100% of their transportation costs. the special education transportation costs is the category that includes the transportation for the homeless and highly mobile. So the fiscal impact would be on the special education formula. There would be an adjustment upwards to the overall amount of special education funding each year. That fiscal note is still outstanding, but essentially what happens is a group of the districts that are subject to the base where they only get the 50 to 60% reimbursement would now get 100% of the reimbursement. So that annual cost would be borne as part of the special education line item funding. It would be an increase in that funding.
Representative Kreshad.
Thank you. And follow up. So if we were to go into leaner times, would this contribute to the cross subsidy shortfall that we have?
Mr. Strom.
Madam Chair, Representative Kreshad, the cross subsidy is the net result after the calculations on the front end. So the cross subsidy would go down for the districts that are affected by this provision. In a lean time, the legislature would need to make decisions which funding to change. The baseline special education level of funding would reflect this higher level of spending. But whether the legislature would determine to change the special ed formula or some other formula would be a decision it would face in a future year.
Thank you.
Representative Kreshad.
No further questions.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Jordan, final comments.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I never want to get between people and their lunch, so I'll be brief. These are costs that are happening in schools. This isn't just something that MPS is doing out of the goodness of their heart. This is something that they have to do. And I know Charlotte does a really good job and is happy to do this. But the reality is that MPS did not create the homelessness issue that our students are living with. Policies have. And so we need to make sure that as we're working to end homelessness, we also need to make sure that we're taking care of the people who are currently experiencing it. And this bill is one way to do it. And I hope we can find space for it in our omnibus bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Jordan. With that, House File 1628 is laid over as amended for an education finance bill. And members, just a reminder, tomorrow we will be meeting back here at 1 p.m. to finish up some of our work. With that, we are adjourned.